Coming up on the Bible Story Podcast, we will be sharing a harrowing story. You gotta stay tuned, it's very important.
That's a good word, Braden.
Oh, thank you.
Harrowing means difficult, sad, disturbing, acutely distressing.
We are going to learn that Jesus bore the sins of many.
And Jesus was the only one who could do this.
Oh man, it is so good to be with you, John, our friends, again this week. My name is Braden Prohowich, and across from me is John Drabert. We work at Covenant Bay Bible Camp, and we have been taking 76 takes at this podcast. So let's see if we can get this one right.
We have, and we do work at Covenant Bay. It is great to be. If you have not signed up yet to come and join us for summer camp, we encourage you to do that. There's no deposit required until June 1st.
Yeah, this summer, it's going to be great regardless of what we can and cannot do at camp this summer, because God has good plans for his people.
Speaking of plans, summer is coming, and maybe you have vacation plans.
Or a great segue, John.
Thank you. Travel plans with some friends, perhaps. Mm-hmm. You may want to check out the Anywhere Adventure Kit, which we will customize for you. This kit will have things based on your interests, for your age. It will include some pretty incredible teaching and lessons. I mean, like, fantastic stuff from the two of us.
Okay, you know? easy there. Okay, let's not, like, put the expectations too high.
Right. Okay, it will include some barely passable teaching from the two of us who really don't know what we are talking about and are downright boring to listen to. And,
actually
don't have any fun ever.
Oh, man, you nailed it. That's
Thank
perfect.
You. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, you said the bar solo. I think we actually just dug a trench and put the bar in there. And so, I mean, we could probably fall over it or trip over it.
Yeah.
So, honestly, though, other than us setting the bar super low, we are really excited about this and the teaching that we get to do in the Adventure Kit as a whole. In the not too distant future, we will be able to give you a short preview of what you can expect through the Anywhere Adventure Kit.
All right, in our previous episode, we learned a bit more about the first Passover, and then we began learning about the last Passover. So we compared the sacrificial lamb, who was to take the place of the firstborn in Israel, with Jesus, who took our place. Now, we only got partway into the story about the last Passover.
Right, okay. So before this, Judas, one of the disciples, had agreed to betray Jesus and help the religious leaders arrest Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Then Jesus began the meal by saying, "I have been very eager to eat this Passover meal with you before my suffering begins. For I tell you now that I won't eat this meal again until its meaning is fulfilled in the kingdom of God."
All right, so last week we learned that Jesus took our place, which is pretty significant. Now, this week, we're going to develop that idea by continuing the story, and we're going to discover that Jesus bore the sins of many, including us.
Correct. Okay, so after Jesus welcomes everyone, and he then picks up a piece of bread. Now, everyone's eyes are fixed on Jesus, since it's customary for somebody to speak about the bread's symbolism during the Passover meal, a tradition. The bread was made without yeast, to be baked quickly and picked up for the journey as needed. Now, remember that Israel was fleeing Egypt, and they needed to be ready to go at any time.
Yeah, but this isn't what Jesus says about the bread. He changes the symbolism of the bread, which is pretty significant. He pulls it apart, and he says, "This is my body, which is given for you. Do this in remembrance of me." And so with that, he passed the bread around the table, and each person grabbed some and ate it as part of the meal.
Now, this would have shocked and puzzled the disciples. But even after that, after the meal, then Jesus takes a cup of wine and he says this: "This cup is the new covenant between God and his people, an agreement confirmed with my blood, which is poured out as a sacrifice for you. But here at this table, sitting among us as a friend, is the man who will betray me. For it has been determined that the Son of Man must die. But what sorrow awaits the one who betrays him?"
So, hold on.
Okay.
There is a lot going on already in this short monologue from Jesus Just so we're clear, we are quoting from Luke chapter 22, and we're going to go through Luke 22 and chapter 23. But first, let's deal with what caught the disciples' attention and probably offended most of them. You know, someone was going to betray Jesus, and Jesus knew about it, and what? Get this, he accepted it. Like, he didn't fight against it.
Yeah, he kind of just says it as fact right away. Like he's not arguing, he's not pointing fingers, he's just saying it.
Yeah.
Interesting. So, I mean, if I found out that someone was, like, going to betray me, man, I'd be flipping tables.
Yeah. No, yes, you would. So would I.
But I'd be angry and upset. I don't think I would just accept it. I'd probably, like, try and find that person and be like, what's your problem?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Jesus' response is just so bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the disciples are hurt.
Hmm.
They begin to question each other, trying to figure out who's going to betray Jesus, probably acting much like you and I would.
It's interesting. And to think the disciples, I mean, they would be hurt because they've grown a lot together. They've been through a very intense process, a very intense journey together.
Mm-hmm.
We also see here that Jesus is predicting his death again. We can't forget that. We don't want to overlook it. The words he used to describe his death would have caused the disciples to think of the sacrificial lamb, an agreement confirmed with my blood, which is poured out as a sacrifice for you.
Okay, so let's not forget that the disciples don't know how the next few days would go.
Right.
So many know this story quite well, but the disciples are living it real time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They're probably thinking that Jesus is speaking maybe metaphorically or symbolically. And even though Jesus had predicted his death a lot of times, you know, several times already, I'm sure the disciples still hope that, you know, it would be a long time from now. It would be when Jesus is an old man and maybe you would expect him to pass
away. Right. Okay. So, you know, we're going to skip ahead in the story a little bit.
Yeah.
We're going to skip a lot. Okay. So we encourage you, the listener, to read through Luke 22 for yourselves.
So you're going to find in Luke 22 that you're going to read how the disciples argued about who would be the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. You're going to find Jesus predicting Peter's denial of Jesus. And it was, you know, there's a lot of heavy, heavy topics and things that are said within this chapter.
Mm-hmm. So skipping ahead, we see that Jesus went to the Mount of Olives, as he often did to pray. He told the disciples to also go off on their own and pray so that they wouldn't give in to temptation.
Right. And then he stepped away from the people while he's at the Mount of Olives, and he begins to pray. And he says, Father, if you are willing, please take this cup of suffering away from me. And you can just hear how the heartache in these words.
Mm-hmm.
Yet I want your will to be done, not mine. And now check this out, Braden. An angel appeared and comforted and cared for Jesus. I think that's pretty incredible if you ask me.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, to be comforted by an angel seems very incredible indeed. So here in this, as Jesus is praying, we actually see that he was under such incredible stress while he's saying these words, while he's saying this prayer, that it actually describes the sweat dripping from his forehead like huge drops of blood pouring out of his skin. Now, Jesus, he didn't want to go ahead with what was before him with his death. You know, he was probably scared and worried and all of those things, asking God if there's any other thing that he could do, but he keeps on praying.
Hmm. Yeah. And then when he finishes up his prayer, he goes back to the disciples, found them asleep because, you know, it's late. They've eaten a meal and, you know, and he says to them, get up and pray so that you will not give into temptation again. He repeated himself.
Mm-hmm. I also think that quickly shows how the disciples weren't like jumping at the bit to go pray. They didn't know that it was going to happen so quickly here.
Yeah.
You know, they're resting, they're relaxing. Like,
yep.
You know, and so at this point, then we see Judas show up with the temple guards and kind of the muscle to arrest Jesus.
Not his own muscle. I mean, like,
no, like other people.
Soldiers.
He might have
had
muscle.
Yeah. Like, well, probably some.
But yeah, he shows up with, you know, the Roman soldiers to arrest Jesus. And he walked over to Jesus and was about to greet him with a kiss.
Yeah. And so these temple guards that Judas was with, it would have been pretty imposing. Could you imagine?
Yeah. Like a mob showing up.
Yeah. So, okay, hold on.
Okay.
Before this gets a little bit weird, we got to remember that being greeted with a kiss,
right,
2,000 years ago, in their culture, was pretty normal.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't an unusual thing to have happen between friends, close friends, and family. So maybe not the way we would greet one another today, but that's
the way. I don't know what you're talking about, John. That's how we.
You do not do any of that ever. Don't even joke about that.
Just, I am joking. But this, it is said in scripture that this is how Judas would point out Jesus to the leaders. That's how he would signify who Jesus was, by that kiss. So, you know, Jesus stops Judas before he kisses him and he says, Judas, would you betray the Son of Man with a kiss?
And so the disciples are witnessing this. They're feeling all of their emotions and they are ready to fight and defend Jesus from being arrested and taken away. And they've brought swords, and one of them even pulled out his sword and cut off the ear of the high priest's slave, which is, like, this is getting to be a pretty intense situation.
Yeah, and the high priests were, like, very respect, like, they were
super
very
powerful.
Powerful. Yeah.
Very powerful. And so Jesus is not having any of it.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, to his disciples, put your swords away. And then he walks over to the man and he heals his ear.
But I can't, it's honestly hard to wrap my head around this. I can't really imagine how the disciples would have felt here. They're ready to fight. They're ready to die in the fighting. You know, they're going to defend Jesus as much as they need to.
Yeah.
But their leader, Jesus, wasn't fighting. In fact, he's healing the people that they had hurt. And he's accepting the fact that he is about to be arrested and killed.
Yeah, a very passive stance by Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
But very strong in a certain way, too. I mean, the strength it takes to heal your enemy is huge. So then looking at the high priests and the temple guards and the other says, Jesus says to them, you know, am I some dangerous revolutionary that you come with swords and clubs to arrest me? Why didn't you arrest me in the temple? I was there every day. But this is your moment and the time when the power of darkness reigns.
Now, no one expected this response. I mean, everyone was ready for a fight. Swords were drawn, right? The high priest brought the temple guards and a mob, you know, power in numbers. And Jesus was like a lamb, completely willing to go with them, with the ones who intended to hurt him. But unlike the lamb, he was fully aware of their intentions and what was to come.
That just blows me away. So we got to skip ahead. We'll skip over the part where Peter denies knowing Jesus, and just as Jesus had predicted.
Well, we're not skipping it. You're just mentioning it now, so it's fine.
We're not going to go into detail, so we're skipping. We see the high priest, Jesus before the high priest, and who falsely accused him. They then brought Jesus before Pilate. We are now in Luke chapter 23, and Pilate, feeling intense pressure from all sides, sentences Jesus to death, even though he had found no guilt in what Jesus had done or said. And there was no reason for him to be sentenced to death.
Yeah. In that chapter, you really see Pilate struggle with that decision. So after Jesus is sentenced to death, they then lead Jesus away. He was beaten so badly and could no longer even carry the cross in which they're going to nail him to the final place. And so they actually find another man from the crowd to carry the cross for Jesus.
So Jesus was led outside the city, then nailed to the cross between two criminals. You know, the mocking and brutal treatment of Jesus continued. They put a sign above his head stating, King of the Jews. The soldiers gambled for his clothes. One of the criminals being crucified next to Jesus even made fun of him. In the midst of all that is happening and has already happened, Jesus says this, Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they are doing.
Now, first of all, that's crazy to think that the person dying beside him took that time to make fun of him.
Yes.
Like, that's such a powerful image that I actually have never really sat with before. In his last dying moments, he's using that to make fun of Jesus. It's wild.
Mm.
Anyway, there were many people there specifically just to torture and kill Jesus. Now, it kind of seems like Jesus really was all alone, carrying this cross, walking this path, and that there was no one there to support him. But some women were filled with sorrow as they watched from a distance, you know, what was going on. And they were some of Jesus's followers.
Yeah. So, you know, allow me to read the conversation between the criminals and Jesus. You make a really good point. It's something worth just sitting on for a little bit. So let me read it. This is Luke chapter 23, verses 39 to 43. And it says this. One of the criminals hanging beside him scoffed, So you're the Messiah, are you? Prove it by saving yourself and us too while you're at it. The other criminals protested, Don't you fear God, even when you have been sentenced to die? We deserve to die for our crimes, but this man hasn't done anything wrong. Then he said to Jesus, Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. And Jesus replied, I assure you, today you will be with me in paradise.
You know, while Jesus is dying this excruciating death, we see that he looks at the criminal and has compassion for him. It's unreal. We see him first getting mocked by one criminal, and then Jesus takes compassion on the criminal and the people that are doing it. You know, the people that have sentenced him.
Yeah.
I mean, it's such an incredible contrast, the actions and the words of Jesus compared to the religious leaders and the soldiers and the many others involved in the specific plot to kill Jesus.
Yeah. Soon after, you know, Jesus shouted, Father, I entrust my spirit into your hands. And then with those words, he breathed his last breath.
And when the Roman officer overseeing the execution saw what had happened, he worshiped God and he said, Surely this man was innocent. And when all the crowd that came to see the crucifixion saw what had happened, they went home in deep sorrow. But Jesus's friends, including the women who had followed him from Galilee, stood at a distance watching.
You know, after his death, a man named Joseph, who was part of the Jewish High Council, but, you know, did not agree with the plot to kill Jesus, went to Pilate and asked for his body. He then purchased a tomb, or he had purchased a tomb, and he buried Jesus in that tomb. So the women who were watching from a distance, they followed Joseph and saw where the tomb was and where he buried Jesus. The women went home and prepared some spices and ointments for his burial. They did not finish, though, before the Sabbath began. So they ended up resting for the Sabbath day, which follows the law.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next day, they were going to go back to the tomb to anoint his body.
Which was tradition for them, to bring the spices and the oils. That was the anointing of the body. You know, and here in this moment, we see that Jesus was dead. He was fully and completely not living. He was buried. Women were waiting to anoint his body, which obviously was only done for dead people. And Jesus was dead.
Yeah. We just got to let that sink in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is, for us listening to this story 2000 years ago, it makes me feel a lot of different emotion.
Mm-hmm.
I am not sure what I would have felt as one of the disciples
mm-hmm.
or one of the onlookers. You know, Braden, months ago we spoke about the prophets and how they would listen to God and then speak God's message to the people. Sometimes it would be a prediction of the future. Well, Isaiah was one of those prophets, and he was predicting much of what this story we heard, much of what we heard in this story today. So let's listen to Isaiah 53, verses 7 through 12. And it's a bit of a longer chunk, so bear with me. He was oppressed, speaking of Jesus, mm-hmm. he was oppressed and treated harshly, yet he never said a word. He was like a lamb to the slaughter, and as a sheep is silent before the shearers, he did not open his mouth. Unjustly condemned, he was led away. No one cared that he died without descendants, that his life was cut short in midstream. But he was struck down for the rebellion of my people. He had done no wrong and had never deceived anyone. But he was buried like a criminal. He was put in a rich man's grave. But it was the Lord's good plan to crush him and cause him grief. Yet when his life is made an offering for sin, he will have many descendants. He will enjoy a long life, and the Lord's good plan will prosper in his hands. When he sees all that is accomplished by his anguish, he will be satisfied. And because of his experience, my righteous servant will make it possible for many to be counted righteous, for he will bear all their sins. I will give him the honors of a victorious soldier, because he exposed himself to death. He was counted among the rebels. He bore the sins of many and interceded for rebels.
This is our lesson for the day, that Jesus bore the sins of many. This was something that happened once and for all of time, for the past, the present, and the future. John, I am humbled and really not sure what to say, which does not happen often.
Not happen at often at all. You know, Braden, I think it's okay for us to shed a tear. I mean, yes, this happened 2,000 years ago, but consider this. You know, we are still part of this story today. Jesus died for our sins. And so I think it's appropriate for us to shed a tear, to feel sorrow, to feel grief in the midst of this story that bizarrely has happened 2,000 years ago and continues to play out in my life,
mm-hmm.
your life, and others. It's appropriate for us mm-hmm. to feel that grief.
Yeah, this story really hits hard every single time. In fact, I feel like I connect with it a little bit more each time I read it. The lesson today, I mean, it's enormous. You know, he bore the sins of many, including you and me.
All right. We've got one more thing.
As always.
As always. And I'm not trying to make light of this significant moment and nor the story, but...
Growth tip time.
Growth tip time.
All right, Braden. With Easter coming up around the corner, in which is a time where we remember the death and resurrection of Jesus, now, I think it would be appropriate for us to sit in this story for a while longer.
Yeah, totally. I mean, okay, so the four books categorized as the Gospels are Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Not you, John.
Not me.
Other John. So anyway, each time in each of those Gospels, this story is recorded. I mean, we know the Gospels as eyewitness accounts of the disciples of Jesus. And I think it would be a great idea for us to read all four of those accounts of this story, or at least try to get through a couple of them.
All right. So Matthew chapter 26 and 27,
mm-hmm.
Mark chapter 14 and 15, Luke 22 and 23, and John chapters 18 and 19. That's where you're going to be able to find this story in each book. And all of them record it just slightly different, with a few different details and mm-hmm. et cetera. So it's fascinating.
It is really interesting to see how their different personalities play out in the way that they write the Gospels.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. So just sit and as you read the story, let God work in your heart. You know, keep your heart and your mind and your spirit soft towards him.
I'm not sure about you, Braden, but, you know, I've really enjoyed sharing this story. It's been heavy, but it's been so good. Hey, guys, thanks for tuning in. Just so grateful for everyone who is sharing this podcast. It means the world to Braden and I. We're so appreciative.
Yeah, and don't forget to check us out at covenantbay.ca. We would love to hang out with you this summer, and so covenantbay.ca is where you can register for summer camps.
Hey, follow us on Instagram at Bible Story Pod. Until next time, have a great week.
Yeah, we love you guys and are praying for each and every one of you. Take care. Last episode, we heard about Jesus crucified on a cross. It was a hard story to hear, but you know what? It's not over yet.
Coming up on the Bible Story Podcast, we tell the rest of the story, which we believe contains the most important message in humanity's history. It's huge.
It's a huge story, John. Lots of pressure.